The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
All right. Well, I am not Vina Jones Cox. I am Scott Ellsworth. I'm going to guest host today, and I have with us today a gentleman who has done a lot of lending and is going to share his wisdom. Chris McCarty is with us. He is a 35 years real estate investor, hundreds of buy and hold single-family, multifamily, and commercial purchases. But in addition, he's loaned personal funds to other real estate investors for a side hustle for about the past 20 years. He founded FlippinLoan.com with his wife, Margaret, and he's originated over 2,000 fix and flip and buy and hold bridge loans working with real estate investors. Welcome, Chris. How are you?
Hey, Scott. Good. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Let's start up maybe with your background. So what brought you into the world of private lending?
Well, I was a borrower for much of my life, accumulating real estate. I had always had a regular avocation. I was in a different business and several businesses, but I always accumulated real estate as just sort of a side hustle, as you had indicated there in my bio. For the last 30 years, I've been accumulating real estate, and always in my career, when I had excess capital, I would lend it out to my friends. That's kind of how it all started. In my experience with lending, just loaned it to people that I knew, people that were doing the same thing I was doing, people that I trusted, that I knew, that I felt good about the what they were buying. And so, just as a side hustle, I did that in addition to my real estate, in addition to my day job. And then over the years, I'm 68, so over the years, the real estate began to get paid off and money started coming in. And my wife, Margaret, and I in 2018 decided to just start the side hustle, take the side hustle and make it the main hustle with lending. And we formed our company, FlippinLoan.com, and we service basically the same community, the fix and flip, the buy and hold real estate investor community with what we call hard money loans. Our loans are just temporary for 1 year or less is what they're structured for, and help people either get the property stabilized or onto the next leg of refinancing, or if they're flipping it, then we provide the capital for people to flip loans. We only work in Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky currently, and got Jonathan Hayes, family member, involved in the business as well now also.
Well, that is awesome. So what do these typical loan structures look like? What are some typical terms, rates, points, et cetera? What are those? And maybe you can explain, some of our viewers might not know, listeners might not know what some of those terms are either. So just give us a little idea on what a typical structure looks like.
Yeah, so we are hard money. That's sort of a harsh term, maybe. Private money is another way of describing it. And we go in the arenas that typical banks will not go into. A creditworthy borrower, generally speaking, with the local banks, generally they have a typical time, particularly when the properties require renovation. It's a lot of structure and organization and accountability to bankers. On the bankers, scheduling the construction draws, making sure the work gets done on a timely manner, and that when all of the construction funds have been spent, the property is then completed and ready for permanent financing. And bankers just candidly don't, traditional banking, just don't like that kind of lending. And so we are a niche market, and anybody that's in the fix and flip or the buy and hold arena, typically if you don't have access to your own capital, a line of credit or other resources, we are the solution for people like us in the hard money space. The private lending space are the solution for that. And we are often just the transition between the purchase and the permanent financing if somebody's going to keep it as a long-term rental. We just provide that interim financing. If somebody's just going to buy a property, fix it up, and flip it, fix and flip to the retail consumer, again, we are that transition funding for that period while they're renovating the house before they sell it, the purchase and the renovation fund. So depending on the borrower, depending on the circumstance, we will loan all of or some of a portion of the capital that's required to get that property either ready to sell to the end consumer or to put permanent financing on it after it's been completely renovated with a traditional bank or some of the other financial institutions and financial products that are out there for long-term financing.
What type of rates and points and things like that do you typically see?
Our rates are going to be more expensive because there's more risk.
Sure.
But our rates are going to be in the 12% range on up from there.
Yeah, actually, that's not bad. I think you're right. It is some risk. So, and speaking of that, how do you really evaluate a potential borrower and a deal? Do you focus more on the asset, or do you focus on the borrower, or is it a combination?
All the above. We want to fully understand the asset, the real estate that's being purchased. We want to fully understand the borrower, and we want to fully understand the brevity of our loan. Our loan is for 1 year, so that what is the exit? How are you going to pay us off? Our rates are typically too expensive for long-term financing, so we want to look at the collateral, the asset. We want to look at the borrower and the exit. How are you going to pay us off? So we'll start with the collateral. Do we like it? Is it a straightforward purchase? Does it have a lot of problems? How much problems does it have? Is it a straightforward? It's an A, B, C, D process of getting the property renovated so that it's ready to sell or completely or to keep it as a long-term rental with refinancing. So we want to understand that. We don't want to get into unicorn scenarios. We like the bread and butter of the single family, the duplex, the triplex, the fourplex. Occasionally we'll get into commercial properties, but we like bread and butter collateral that anybody would want to own and feel proud to own. The borrower, it's a little different there. The first thing we're going to do is have a conversation with the borrower. We're going to take an application. We're going to ask for tax returns. We're going to ask for a personal financial statement. We're going to want to know what this borrower is about. Do they have a W-2 job? Do they do this full time? Is this their first time, their 10th time, their 100th time? We want to understand a little bit about that borrower and how he or she will pay us off. The credit report is a good first stop. We're going to do a soft pull on credit. We're going to, we're going to want to know, does this person pay their bills? We don't want to loan to somebody that doesn't pay their bills or that is a risk. If somebody has got an extremely low credit score, they don't have anything to lose if the deal goes south. And so, again, just like any other financial institution, we're going to look at that and, take it on a case-by-case basis. We're going to use we like the better the credit, the higher the credit, the better. But all that right. is not everything that we look at.
Great.
And then lastly, once those first two things are satisfied, then we're going to look at the exit. What is the plan that this borrower is going to implement to get the property completed, renovated, and resold or refinanced in a timely manner? In a timely manner, none of our loans are more than 1 year.
Okay. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. If you have any questions, call 877-772-9658 or email vinaradio@gmail.com. See you in a bit. All right, we are back. I just wanted to remind everybody, And for those that don't know it, Rhea GC, who sponsors this program, is having their online national chapter meeting on Thursday. The topic is success tips for new investors. So especially if you're new, you want to be there. You get onto Zoom. It's very easy. It's 6:30 to 9 o'clock Eastern time. It's totally free. Anyone can get a link. Go to CincinnatiRhea.com. And then the other thing is Chris, who we're talking with today, is going to have a 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern time session this Saturday on all the steps to qualify borrowers and properties and making sure you have the right protections and paperwork in place. So inexpensive, go to CincinnatiRhea.com and sign up for that that Saturday session. It is really important. So, Chris, you were talking a little bit about what kind of a borrower. You did mention credit scores. What other kind of documentation, due diligence to require before funding a deal? Do you actually go out and visit the properties, that kind of thing? So just sort of give us an insight into that.
Sure, Scott. So backing up, though, just that Saturday session is a week from Saturday.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. I totally misread that. Sorry. It's a week from Saturday. Yeah, if you get on this Saturday, he will not be there. So it's two Saturdays. I'm sorry. Thanks for correcting me, Chris.
Okay, so the types of things that we don't visit the property. We if it's in my hometown, I might, I may already be familiar with the neighborhood or the property or the so forth. But no, generally speaking, we are going to order an appraisal. Our appraisal is going to have six comps to it. It's going to be three as-is comps and then three ARV comps. The as-is comps, we're going to look for similar properties in similar condition. We're going to look for three similar properties that are not renovated to kind of use as a baseline for determining, is our borrower paying a good price for the property? So we'll use those three comps to determine that our borrower is in fact or not paying a proper price for the property to begin with. And then our borrower is going to provide us with what we call a scope of work. And it is a list of all the renovations that they intend to do to the property to make it a fix and flip property that they're going to resell, or the renovations that they're going to do to the property to get it stabilized and ready for a tenant, and they're going to keep that property as a buy and hold property. So then we would get three more comps from the marketplace, and an appraiser determines these. We're going to look for three more completed houses in the same general area as the subject property that have already been renovated and sold. So we're going to look at those properties and determine that our borrower, in fact, has a property that when it's finished, it will be comparable in value to those other three sold houses that have been renovated. So that is sort of the gospel, the Bible, the standard. We judge each deal on its merit for the collateral part. We will then dole out or distribute use some round numbers. If there's $50,000 worth of renovation that's needed to be done to the property, we will divide that $50,000 into three construction draws. We will provide the first draw at closing and instruct our borrower, hey, go do a third of the work, provide photo documentation to our website, and we will look at those and determine, yes, you have completed approximately one-third of your scope of work, and then we will ACH the next one-third of your construction draws into your bank account the following day to repeat. And then with the ID, again, repeat that. And then if you once you've completed the second draw, submit your third draw, and that should complete the property based upon the work that you have detailed in your scope of work of what you are going to do to complete the property. So that kind of completes the collateral part and the justification part of making the loan to begin with. And then, kind of looking the next step, I talked about the collateral, the borrower, and the exit. The borrower, again, we're going to run a credit report. We're going to have a conversation about that person. We're going to look at their financial wherewithal. And, it really runs the gamut, Scott. I mean, we work anywhere from not often, but very first time first-time investors to seasoned investors. I mean, we have customers that we have done 20 or 30 deals with over the years, all the way down to the first deal. So, again, we're going to look at the borrower's information. Do they have a job? We're going to look at 2 years' worth of tax returns to determine that they, in fact, are a real person. We're going to, at this point, we're going to do what a bank would do. We're going to do some due diligence on our own about this borrower's capacity, creditworthiness, and ability to accomplish the job. If they've never done it before, there may be some hand-holding and some tutoring that we're not, you know, we don't like to do that, but we will. But generally speaking, we're going to be working with investors that, you know, have done this before and are familiar with the process and know how to work with contractors, know how to balance a checkbook, know how to get the project across the finish line. For the most part, we work with entrepreneurs, people that are passionate about what they're doing. They've already done the research, the homework. They have brought it to us because they feel like it is a worthwhile endeavor and risk for them to take this project on. And a lot of times we are just confirming what they have already concluded with an appraisal and our own judgment of their ability to accomplish the job.
So tell me. So interesting, because most private lenders I know, they – when a borrower actually submits a draw request, it's for the work they just completed. You actually indicated you will actually advance them the first draw. So I think that's pretty nice for the borrower, because they can get to work and they know they've got money to do that. I have not seen a lot of lenders do that. So kudos to you that you're doing that. Obviously, it puts you at a little bit of a risk, right? That they don't do what they're going to do. And then, like you said, that new borrower, that first-time person, they're more risky, I would guess.
Yes. So. Yes. And, you know, it is surprising, and I say this in all sincerity and genuineness, our borrowers are entrepreneurs. They, you know, it's hard to hide behind a facade that your intent is to do harm and not pay your complete your project and do your obligation. So yes, you're right. We're different in that regard. Jonathan and I have sat in the chair at one time or another in our lives of every one of these borrowers, and I can honestly, when I see the first construction photographs come into our website, and I look, I can tell if this person knows what they're doing or not, or if they have a competent contractor. So, you know, right then at that step, I have a sort of an opinion in my mind about their ability, what they're doing, their sincerity, their knowledge. And so I'm on guard or not based upon what I see. Yes, we are exposed. You know, and with that exposure, that risk, comes, you know, on our part is the diligence on our part to not do dumb stuff with the lending decisions that we make. You know, a lot of our customers are not eligible to go to a bank and borrow money. But it's all going to be about that conversation about the borrower, the candid discussion about their creditworthiness, what's their credit score, their income, their tax return, their assets, their personal financial statement, and their experience. We have lots of people that this is what they do for a living. They don't have jobs. They don't have W-2 employment. They make their living flipping houses, buying and holding houses, collecting rents. And there's a whole, I know your audience is real estate focused, but for people that are maybe hearing this for the first time, it's a whole world out there of investing in real estate and maneuvering and learning these skills that our customers have mastered with learning how to renovate and fix and flip or buy and hold these properties.
All right, so we're going to take a break in about 3 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes. But before that, can you sort of run through what a quality buyer is? I mean, I know you're looking at credit and things like that, but what if I'm a 500 credit score, are we good? Or are we not?
No, we're not. We're not good. Our threshold is going to be about 650. On a credit score, and if it's lower than that, we're going to want to hear the story of why. You know, what were the personal circumstances that happened to get that credit score below 650? you know, people have challenges in their life. We understand that. And that is all documented on a credit report. You can see what happened. Somebody got sick. Somebody got cancer. Somebody got divorced. But at the end of the day, a credit score is something to be guarded and protected. And if somebody has no credit and they're highly leveraged and they want us to give them most of the money, they have nothing to lose if that situation goes bad. So we want somebody that has something to lose. And it's just a normal creditor scenario that we're no different. We want to make sure that we have somebody that is motivated and capable, and that capability is demonstrated with their credit score. Again, 650 is the threshold. So, but we work with people in the 850s, 830s, in the mids, the sevens, all up and down the gamut. Because, again, people run out of cash, and that's where we come in. But that's where the diligence and the underwriting comes with our borrower.
Do you find that do you want them to have reserves or not? Are you looking for that?
The more the better, Scott. But in reality, a lot of people, we're going to look at that, but a lot of people that are in this space that, you know, they have multiple properties that they have as long-term rentals, or that multiple flips that are going, cash is hard to come by. Real estate investors have a hard time holding on to cash.
Yep.
And if they had a big pile of cash, they don't need us. They can go to the bank.
I get it. All right, so we're going to take a break. Again, you have a question, 877-772-9658, or email vinaradio@gmail.com. All right, we are back, and we are with Chris McCarty, and this is the first time really I've gotten the chance to talk to Chris, and he has just been a trove of information. And just both if you want to be a lender yourself, a lot of people aspire to that, or you need to loan money. And he's going to be doing, not this Saturday, but the next Saturday from 9 to 3 Eastern, he's going to do a Saturday session on Zoom. It's very inexpensive. Go to CincinnatiRIA.com and you can sign up. You do not want to miss that, because he's going to take the little things we've been touching on today and he's going to go in much more detail about that. So, Chris, so a couple things. One, how fast can a private lender, how fast do you close on a loan, and what kind of factors influence the speed of that?
We publicly state that we can close a loan in 10 days.
Wow.
So that is provided we can get good title. We have appraisers on standby that we can get an appraisal order out today, and generally can get that property inspected tomorrow or the following day. We get occasional log jams there, but generally speaking, we try to get that done. And then in the meantime, as soon as we get a contract and approve someone, we send it to a closing attorney to get the title ran, and all we need to close is an appraisal and good title. Okay. So it's really dependent on those two things. We can control the appraisal. A lot of times we cannot control the closing because, you know, candidly in this space, there are often distressed properties, you know, delinquent loans, foreclosures, properties that are right. Problematic, wills, estates, so a lot of times there's title problems, but if there are no title problems, if it's a clean deal, we can get it done in 10 days.
Okay.
All the time. Get them closed in 10. I committed verbally to somebody today, the deal came in, that we will close it next Thursday.
Wow. That's awesome.
It needed to move fast, and so we're going to get it done.
Gotcha. All right. We have a caller on the line with a question. Russell, what question do you have for Chris?
Yes. Thank you. Yes. As far as credit goes, more credit questions, I have a client who who's in like the low to mid 700s, got decent, great credit, although wants to get into the 800s, and doesn't have any installment loans like student loan, personal, payday, or auto loans. And I'm like, wonder what you may offer, suggest to clients who are in a scenario where they're looking to get their credit into the 800s, or if that's something they can handle at all.
I don't. Well, for our purposes,
good to meet you.
I'm sorry, yeah. For our purposes, high 800s or anything above 800 is a plus, but it's not any kind of a requirement to us. I mean, I don't know that any financial institution or any lenders are going to have a challenge in the 700s, much less in the 800s. And I'm not sure I'm answering your question, but maybe dial back into that a little, help me understand.
Yeah. I mean, they want to get into the 800s. That's what I'm saying. So that's their goal.
Are you trying to lend to them?
Possibly, yes.
So do you need them to be an 800?
No. But they've expressed an interest in it. And I'm just thinking what you might suggest for getting that number.
I would, if this was something that they were interested, they could go to YouTube, for example, and do a search on YouTube and understand the Fair Isaacs, FICO, Fair Isaacs Corporation, how they evaluate someone's credit. I mean, it's not something that I can speak, professionally on. I just know that there are tools and ways and means by which people can raise their score. The difference to me is anything above a 700, I'm talking to you.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Great. And what scenario is, like, if your client might be like someone who's been of a client or profile, like it might be somebody who's gone through a divorce or a job loss or a health crisis or that sort of thing. Is that what we're talking about? With respect to real estate?
Let me make sure I'm understanding. You are considering loaning your money to this person. Is that sort of the context of your question?
Correct. Or helping them out with their real estate.
Okay. Well, an 800 plus credit score is, it's almost irrelevant in this scenario. If you have, if you're above 700, what I want to look for when I'm evaluating anybody is I'm going to go back to a credit report. And, a credit report can damage someone's credit if you do a hard pull on their credit. So we only do a soft pull. It doesn't really impact their credit score, and they don't get pestered with other vendors trying, because sometimes when you get a hard pull on your credit, you get all kinds of inquiries. It lowers your score. It shows up in this inquiry on your credit report. So we don't do a hard pull. We do a soft pull just to basically confirm a credit report with somebody's stated information on their application. We want to be able to verify. Russell gives me an application. I'm going to look at Russell's credit report. I'm going to cross those two things over. Russell says he owns XY real estate. I'm going to make sure that that's on his credit report. He says he's got this much credit card. I'm going to look at all that. Credit report's going to show the timeliness of his payments. So we're going to look at that. We don't want to work with somebody that's got a bunch of 30-day late, 60-day late, 90-day late. If they don't pay those folks, they might not pay us. So we don't really want to get involved in that. So that's a credit report is important. What other assets do they have? One of the things that Jonathan here in the office always talks about is a parachute. What kind of parachute can somebody pull financially if they run into trouble? If you loan this person money and all of a sudden their tenant didn't pay rent, for example, you don't want to hear that story. You want to know what's your borrower going to do to make sure you get paid. So if he has no other resources or no ability to acquire or generate other resources, like a job, for example, I would be worried about that.
Okay. And my last question, what if a person has a very low credit score because they just do not have credit cards or other form and they're more that just are kind of like unknown to the bureaus?
That's reasonable. Then in that case, I would want to make sure that is true. I have confirmed that. I've looked at their credit report, and I see that they don't have any credit. So I'm going to look at that and say, okay, that's okay. Not everybody has to have credit. Some people don't want credit, don't need credit, don't use credit. Okay. So then I would look at the deal itself. What I say to myself, okay, what is the motivation for this person? Why are they coming to me? Why are they not going to the bank? If they come to me and I wanted to make the deal with them, I would want to know what is their capacity to pay that bill. What is their, is there going to be a tenant there? And if the tenant, moves out and doesn't pay them, do they still have the ability to pay you? So those are the things. Do they have a line of credit? Do they have, you know, a CD? Do they have, you know, cash under the mattress? I mean, it's hard to verify something like that. But, you know, in my conversation with people, talking to them, these are the kind of things that I want to know. I mean, like, okay, what are you going to do? How are you going to pay me if you don't have any income, you don't have a job, and the only thing you have is this tenant, this future tenant that's going to pay the rent? How are you going to confirm it? We don't, for example, deal anything at all to do with homeowners. So you might, Russell, be looking at somebody that is a homeowner and you're going to finance a home. So that's a different matter. There are lots and lots of problems associated with loaning money to homeowners. And we can go down that rabbit hole at another time. But that's problematic if that's what you're considering.
Okay. And if the person has a business, like would you look at their business profile and their business credit and that stuff?
I would. I would want to see what does the business do? Can you understand the business? Can you look at their, do they have a P&L? Do they keep records? Do they have a checking account that you can see the money coming in and the money coming out? Do they have a business tax return that you can look at? You know, again, unfortunately in this space, you know, if somebody was really creditworthy and had assets, they wouldn't be talking to you and they wouldn't be talking to me. They'd be talking to the bank. So in this arena that we're in, you and I now, you know, in the same situation, evaluating our risk, you want to make sure the person can pay you back. And he's got low credit, no assets, no money, no down payment, very little skin in the game, as we call it on this side of the table. I would be careful.
Well, Russell, okay. I want to thank you for your call. Really appreciate
it. You're welcome.
All right.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Hey, so brings up a little bit of a thing for the future. So, you know, we've got budgets, right? You've got a scope of work. What if, seems to be budgets get broken, right? So what do you do at that point? If all of a sudden, you know, the budget, whatever happened, it's $10,000 more than the 50 you lent them. What do you do?
Well, ideally, we don't want to be getting involved in that. We want our borrower to have the capacity, the ability, and the wherewithal to solve that problem.
Gotcha.
Now, do I say that we never do that? Yes, sometimes we do. We'll get in there and say, okay, there are extenuating circumstances, or this happened, or that happened, and, you know, where we could say, okay, we're going to modify this loan and give you some more money. But we don't do that very often, Scott. I mean, it's a 1 in 300 or 400 or 1 in 200 or 300 loan scenario that we do that. We want to know from our borrower up front that they dialed this in, and we are going to confirm on our end that they have dialed that in and that they're accurate in their scope of work. I mean, all day long we look at these photos that come in, and I look at the before and the after, and I know, you know, what it's going to take, how much a roof costs, what a floor costs, what a furnace costs, what, you know, all that. So intuition, experience, whatever, sure. I can kind of work and say, nah, I think you're short. You better redo this.
Gotcha. So the one thing that we have, a lot of people have heard that, you know, with private lending, a lot of stuff has gone bad. They're, you know, the loans have gone. We're going to talk a little bit more about that after our break. But I just want to sort of put that out there that, you know, are there reasons that people are hearing that? And what are the circumstances revolved around that? So we're going to take a break. Just a reminder, the REAGC Online National Chapter Meeting is Thursday. And Chris will be speaking all day on Saturday. Two Saturdays from today. We'll see you back after this. All right, we are back. My name is Scott Ellsworth. I'm guest hosting tonight and here with Chris McCarty, just a guy that's been doing private lending for decades. And you need to come out to a week. It'll be two Saturdays from today. You need to come out and to the Zoom all-day Saturday session and see him. So let's talk a little bit about... We had a person email a question about a situation where a borrower defaults. So we'll get to that. What steps to take? But do you feel that there are more defaults today, loans going bad? And why would that be if that's the case?
I can only speak from hearsay and our own experience. We have extremely few loans that are going bad. Extremely few. I've only got a couple that are, you know, that are, you know, and I say that, knock on wood. I've only got a few that are bad. The problems with the loans that you hear about out there, it's because they, in the real estate investor community. So, I mean, I think, Scott, what you're referring to is in the real estate investor community, people make loans and end up having problems. Is that really the question you're asking?
I think that's the case, and I think I know part of the answer, but I'm sure you're going
to. Yeah, it all has to do with the underwriting, and you know, right. There's for those that are old enough, Ronald Reagan had a saying when he was dealing with the Soviets: "Trust but verify." And I'm going to listen to your explanation if you're a borrower of why you know you're talking to me instead of a bank, of why your credit is, you know, 600 instead of, you know, 700. I'm going to run your credit. I am going to do my job to confirm and verify on my end that you are a real person and then you don't have a bunch of, you've not put a snow job on me, and that you don't have a trail of disaster behind you and I'm your latest victim to borrow money from. So it's all in the underwriting. And for the most part, my understanding of a lot of these loans that have gone bad are because in the investor-to-investor community that you're asking about, it's because people didn't do the job. They took somebody at face value and didn't run their credit, didn't get an application, didn't know who they were dealing with. It was a personality, a referral from somebody else. And I tell you, it is amazing when you look at as many credit reports as I do. There is, you cannot judge a book by its cover, right. And that the cover of that book is, you know, no matter what it looks like, the pages of that book are the credit report and the due diligence that we do to verify that you have the capacity to pay us back, the good intentions, the capacity, the financial wherewithal, the creditworthiness. All of the above. And I would never just make a loan to somebody that I did not know who that was. They may have every single positive intention to do everything that they tell me they're going to do, but I want to know more than that. I want to be able to verify this person. And, you know, if somebody might be sketchy a little bit initially, let's get one deal under our belt together. And if it goes okay, then I'm going to, like, paint you with a broad brush and be more inclined to work with you the next time because you performed the first time. So it's all in the underwriting. It's all in the underwriting, the borrower understanding who they are, their creditworthiness, their capacity, everything that it takes to pay a loan back.
So the biggest risk that I'm sort of hearing that a private lender faces is not necessarily the property, the collateral. It's the borrower. Is that fair to say?
Well, yes. I mean, as long as you've got an appraisal to support the value, for starters. But yes, and after that, the real estate is what it is. You've got to have insurance coverage if the tornado blows it down or the fire burns it up. But you've already determined that the collateral will stand on its own if it's, you know, renovated according to the scope of work. And remember, we're only giving you the money that it needs to, you know, we're doling it out. But if the borrower doesn't pay, it doesn't matter what he has or hasn't done to that property. If he doesn't pay, I mean, he's going to get a collection guy after him and a collection attorney after him, and we're going to be putting this thing on a foreclosure path sooner rather than later. A lot of this, if you don't return my phone call, if you bounce check and you don't call me proactively and say, hey, Chris, hey, we've got a little problem here. I'm going to get this check, and on Friday I'm going to make it good. You know, those are proactive, positive things that keep a deal moving forward. If it starts to get off the rails a little bit, nobody's returning phone calls, you're not hearing what you need to hear, that's where, you know, the alarm bells need to sound. Don't waste your time. Don't dilly-dally around. Get yourself a good collection attorney. Get started. And it goes back now to the credit report. If that borrower has a credit report that they want to protect,
right,
they're going to do everything they can once they know you're not going to be you're not going to be pushed around. They are going to protect that credit report. Now, if they had a 600 credit report to begin with, they've got nothing to lose. So
sure.
You're at a disadvantage there. But if they've got a 750 and, you know, their life depends on their ability to use their credit cards and get a car loan when they need it and get their mortgage refinanced, the last thing they need from on their credit report is a judgment and a foreclosure.
Yeah, and it's so true. I've had, you know, I've always said to my staff, I'm like, you have to make sure every bill is paid on time because my credit is extremely important. Your credit is important to you. I mean, that's the deal. Our credit is so important, and people don't take it seriously enough that they have to do whatever it takes to keep their everything paid timely. It's just it's crazy. So Tina does have a question. She basically says, so how do you handle that situation when the borrower defaults? So what steps are you going to take? You talked about a collection agency, but what other steps do you take when a borrower's in default?
Well, you've got to get an attorney involved, an attorney and or a collection agency. I mean, there's a couple of ways. I mean, you've got a promissory note that is in default, and then you've got a mortgage that supports the promissory note and the mortgage or deed of trust, depending on, you know, what state you live in. The mortgage or the deed of trust is the instrument that allows you to judicially foreclose on that property and take it back. So you've got a promissory note that you could get a judgment against somebody on for defaulting on that promissory note. And then ultimately, your collateral is in that real estate. You've got two means of, you know, two promises. You've got the promise from the individual and the corporation that borrowed the money from you to pay you back. And then, you know, if that doesn't get you anywhere, you've got the real estate that you can foreclose on. And it's a no-win situation foreclosing on a property. It takes forever. There can be needless delays depending on the state and the county. I mean, there's sure. Some counties faster than others. Some you know, are lickety-split, and some could take years. And there are all sorts of delaying tactics that can be deployed by the borrower to just keep it moving along. You know, they can file bankruptcy. They can do this. You know, there's several things that can happen to delay it. So you don't want to, if you're not getting paid and you're a lender, if you're not getting paid, you need to take action, take steps to move forward with a collection agency to get after that person for a default on the promissory note and then get the thing into a foreclosure matter so you can get at least get the property back or have it sold and get your money back.
So what are the, I mean, I think underwriting is going to be the answer, but do you think that's the biggest mistakes new private lenders make? Is that underwriting?
Absolutely. People, and again, I'm in the, you know, the arena that I've been in my whole life as a real estate investor with people that I know and the communities and the groups and the same groups that you're associated with up there in Ohio. We know each other. We hear this. We hear that. Somebody's looking for this. Somebody's looking for that. So-and-so needs some money to buy whatever. And because we may know that person or they present themselves well, we're like, oh, hey, I'll loan that guy some money or that person or that lady or whoever some money without the due diligence. And 9 times out of 10, you're fine. I mean, they're probably fine. As I said earlier in the conversation, our customers are entrepreneurs. They are, you know, they have the intent to perform and to do what they say they're going to do. But when the rubber meets the road is when something happens, and are they going to make good on their obligation no matter what? And if they don't return the phone call, they're hiding from you and they're bouncing checks and they're not making them good, they're not being proactive. That goes back to, you know, underwriting is still not going to guarantee that doesn't happen.
Sure.
But I know up front that I've underwritten this person, this borrower, and I already know a little bit about their history because I've at least done the fundamentals. And maybe, you know, their train falls off the track and they're doing the best they can and it still winds up in a foreclosure. But the stories that I hear, sort of the what you are alluding to with all this, there's a lot of, you know, casualness in the real estate investor community of putting deals together, loaning money to people, doing this, doing that. We don't do second mortgages. We only do first mortgages. So
sure.
All of that gets back to knowing that borrower, making sound decisions about your underwriting, the creditworthiness of the borrower, the value of the collateral. I'm kind of repeating myself a little bit here, but it gets back to underwriting the borrower.
All right. So, Chris, I got about 30 seconds left. If you could say give me one thing a new private investor should do a new one wants to do, before making their first loan, 30 seconds, what do they do?
Go get a closing attorney that can help that person understand the steps, the processes to evaluating a deal, underwriting a loan, what a mortgage is, what the documents look like, and then I would say attend the week from Saturday session, spend a few bucks, and really get into the detail of what it takes to put a loan together. You're an entrepreneur. You're a lender entrepreneur. You got some money. You want to deploy it, put it to work. You need to learn what you're doing. Don't go out there half-cocked and do silly stuff that's going to get you in trouble because you didn't listen to a situation like what we're talking about right here, how to properly underwrite the borrower.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. You've been a great information, just a vault of information. So look forward to seeing you a week from Saturday. Everybody else, have a good night, and we'll see you next week.